You're listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on Imagining Community do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
How does water make me feel? Well, knowing how hot and arid it is here much of the year, and knowing that water is life to all plants and animals, it makes me feel really grateful. I'm really grateful for the amount of rain we've been getting. I hope we get a decent amount this year. It feels refreshing and cleansing just to be around it and breathe the cleared air around it, but especially to dive into water and feel it washing over your body. The energy of that feels real healing and cleansing. Of course, the water here is moving pretty fast, and I know it's powerful. I like the sound. Sometimes I hear songs or voices, if you will, of the water as it gurgles and makes its way over and under rocks and through branches and such things. And of course, water is often found not flowing, but calm. And when it's calm, unlike this moving water, calm water is highly reflective. It's like a mirror. And so it reminds me of our emotions. When we look into turbulent water or water that is agitated, there may not be much reflected by it. But when it's calm, it clearly reflects. And that's just a little metaphor for life, I think. Not that there's anything wrong with our emotions. They're there for us to learn and to understand and know things and feel things, but to not be controlled by them and to stop and be calm and reflect and be responsive rather than just acting without thinking. So that's more of a symbolic thing that water means to me.
Guillermo Mash here with our monthly Imagining Community segment as we cover water for the entirety of 2021. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram and listen to our podcast on all major streaming platforms. You just heard from naturalist and longtime outdoor educator Robert Dresden, as recorded at Bear Hole on the rocky banks of Big Chico Creek. His recorder music was from the folk song Carry Me Back to the Sea, a fitting opening for our show that features an interview with two of the three women embarking on a rafting trip of the Sacramento River from its source near Mount Shasta all the way to the sea. Next up, an inspiring promotional video from their Instagram site at SacSourceToSea as they prepare to launch on March 14th, followed by an interview with two of the crew members by Jim Brobeck, water policy analyst with Aqua Alliance, here on People Power Radio.
Ready? Okay. My name's Ari Kosel.
And I'm Alyssa Winkleman. I had this idea to do a Source to See on the Sac probably a couple years ago. It just kind of was a fantasy in my head and something that seemed cool to do. And then I started thinking about who I would want to do this trip with. It's like 450 miles. Like, who would I want to spend that much time on the river with? And Ari was the first person I thought of.
And I was immediately like, hell yeah, I want to do that. And then the idea just kept growing from there. And we started thinking about how can we make it more than just us floating down the river. The Sacramento River has so many complex issues and a lot of different stakeholders. Often with pretty different perspectives. And we thought it'd be a really cool idea to try and interview folks while we were boating on the Sac and get a better idea of what's happening on the river, what are the most important issues to people, ultimately just like understand the river and the people who are invested in it.
I have a good friend who works for Trout Unlimited, and he encouraged me to keep the trip all female. It could be a really cool opportunity to kind of promote women's empowerment along with bringing awareness to all the issues on the Sacramento.
And so we were like, well, that sounds like a cool film. We should get someone who could film it since neither of us are like talented in that department. We can boat, but we can't really film.
So we started looking for a filmmaker and got connected with this woman, Jamie, in Alaska. She has done a bunch of different expeditions. She was part of a crew that did the first sea kayak crossing of the Bass Strait, which is between Australia and Tasmania. And she just has such great energy and felt like a really awesome addition to the team. She's super motivated. So the crew just kind of started coming together and it felt like it was complete. We'll be starting at the headwaters of the Sac near Mount Shasta. We'll be traveling over 400 miles downriver. In the first 20 to 30 miles of the river, we'll be going through class 3 and 4 rapids. As we move downstream, the rapids kind of begin to mellow out and we'll be in class 1s and 2s. And then once we get down below Shasta Dam and Keswick Dam, the river gets really wide and really mellow with, you know, some small rapids here and there. As we get down into the Delta, we'll be dealing with tidal impacts and high winds, potentially up to 40 to 50 miles an hour. We'll be passing alongside barges and freight ships and our tiny little boats. Hopefully they don't run over us. Sweet. We are daring and dashing women. We're going to start in pack rafts and go the majority of the trip in pack rafts. Before we reach the Delta, we're going to switch into sea kayaks so that we can better navigate the high winds and the tides. And then we'll be ending in the bay at the Golden Gate Bridge.
Alyssa and I, we both grew up on the Sacramento River, and it was the river that we did our first river guide trainings on. And I think it helped open up a lot of opportunities for us in the outdoors and fueled our passion for the environment, for conservation work, for really protecting the areas that we recreate in and love.
Ari was one of the first people that I got on the river with when we were in high school, and it sparked an interest, but never really felt like something that I was gonna pursue. And then when I was in college, I decided to do a river guide school, and so I did it on the Upper Sac with River Dancers, and I've been a river guide for over 8 years now, and I've worked in the outdoor industry total for over 10 years. My degree is in outdoor adventure leadership from SOU, and so I've really just made outdoors and getting people outdoors and recreating responsibly my entire career. It's something that I care so much about.
I went to UC Davis and studied sustainable agriculture, so I have a lot of personal passion around ag in this state. You know, this is a personal trip, but it has broader implications. Right now, our country, like the seeds of divisiveness have been sown so deep, and it seems like a really cool opportunity to role model having an open mind and like talking to people who don't necessarily share our perspective. What does it mean to others? Why is it important to them? What is their connection to the Sac? And what are they worried about thinking ahead to the future and how this river might change in the next year, 5 years, 10 years down the line? We've started to think more about how we want to capture this story and have been really excited by the inflow of people who are excited as well and like want to support us and want to connect.
I've been so overwhelmed by all the support that we've received. It's so incredible and far more than I could have ever expected. It feels like what we're trying to do is important and other people think that it's important as well and see it as a really cool educational resource.
Some of the things that we're hoping to create afterwards will allow other people to go through a similar journey or exploration to better understand what's happening on the Sacramento River and to get a chance to really tap into the different viewpoints and perspectives. We're so grateful and humbled by the amount of community support we've already received on this project, and we really couldn't do it without just that grassroots fundraising. And we're just hoping that the more momentum we gain, the more people will realize that this is a project that has a lot of credibility. We mean what we say. We're going to follow through on what we're trying to accomplish here. And yeah, we can't do it without support from our community and people like you. If you want to help support our project, check out our website, sacsourcetosea.com.
Our Instagram is sacsourcetosea. And we'll continue to update our Instagram once we get on the river and as we move down the state. So if you're interested in following along on the adventure, that's a great place to see kind of frequent updates.
Go to sacsourcesc.com. There's a donate button that links to our GoFundMe, and help us make it happen.
From the mobile studio of Imagining Community, part of a year-long series on water, my name is Jim Brobeck. I am a watershed policy analyst for Aqua Alliance. Aqua Alliance exists to defend Northern California waters and to challenge threats to the hydrologic health of the Northern Sacramento River watershed. We confront escalating attempts to divert more water from the Northern Sacramento River hydrologic region. Today, I've got the pleasure of interviewing three powerful women who, in a few weeks, will launch their pack rafts onto the river of one of the arms of the mighty Sacramento River to begin a 400-plus mile journey all the way to the Pacific Ocean. You can find more information about their journey on their website, sacsourcetosea.com. And joining me by telephone is Ariana Kossel and Alyssa Winkleman. They live in Mount Shasta, and their colleague Jamie Trapp, who I believe lives in Alaska, is going to accompany them with her camera equipment. So they're going to have a wonderful media coverage of this exciting journey. Welcome to Imagining
Thank you.
Community.
Thanks for having us.
I'd like to start with a question that Guillermo that he posed to me this morning of how you feel paddling on water. But I want to break it down a little bit, because I noticed that you are starting on a reservoir called Lake Siskiyou into the Box Canyon, and later on you'll be in Shasta Reservoir. From what I know, Lake Siskiyou is a recreational reservoir that they keep a pretty steady level in it. So it's got very nice habitat around it. It looks like a beautiful area. Are you going to paddle around Lake Siskiyou?
Yeah, you know, Lake Siskiyou is pretty small, so we'll likely just paddle from the delta across to the Box Canyon Dam. It's a pretty quick paddle, actually, if there's no wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're hoping to start a little bit upstream of Lake Siskiyou and get closer to the actual headwaters, so we'll probably be starting out on skis and doing a little bit of a backcountry ski tour and following one of the forks of the river that feeds into Lake Siskiyou before we hop in our pack rafts and continue by boat from there.
And then you'll portage around the dam into the Box Canyon?
Yep.
And is the Box Canyon going to present some dynamic water for you to paddle?
Definitely. Yeah, this trip starts off with some of the most intense whitewater in the first couple of days. And it will depend also on the water levels that we're facing. And so we know that we're supposed to be getting some more weather coming in starting this coming weekend. And that might cause the flows to be a little bit higher. So it'll definitely be dynamic, because it all depends on what flow we're at and what the weather conditions are. But we're looking at some class 3, class 4 rapids right off the bat.
And you're both experienced river guides, so I imagine while that's exciting, it's not going to be particularly intimidating. How does it feel paddling through such dynamic water?
Yeah, we've both spent a lot of time on the river and have paddled a bunch of different rivers, all varying levels of whitewater. And for me personally, I really love the excitement of class 3 and 4 whitewater. You know, you have to be really on it and aware and looking ahead, reading the water. So yeah, I'm really excited to get back on the water.
Yeah, I think we're definitely not going to take it for granted that we're both experienced whitewater women. Everything's dynamic, especially in the spring. There could be a lot of wood that's in the river. So we're going to be playing it cautious, making sure we're scouting, you know, even portaging if something doesn't feel right. We don't want to start our trip off with any epic swiftwater rescue situations.
Oh, good. I'm curious, do you need to change your vessel to go through whitewater compared to paddling through some of the calmer waters that are further downstream?
So we'll be on pack rafts for the majority of the trip. The reason we chose pack rafts are because they're small, or they're really packable and lightweight. So since we're going to be doing several portages around dams, it felt like the best tool for that. So we have whitewater pack rafts. And so they're built and designed to go through whitewater. And then when we get down near Sacramento, we're going to switch to sea kayaks because it's going to be a lot slower moving water and windy. And then we'll be kind of encountering the tidal impacts of the bay. So, but the majority of the trip will be in pack rafts.
When I saw on your website that you're going to be using pack rafts, I assumed they were to pack all your camping gear, but now I understand it's so they're more portageable. Are you going to be having a support crew to help you transport your camping gear?
I think we're going to try and pack as if we're going backpacking. So, you know, we're carrying all of our camping gear and food with us. But fortunately, because the Sacramento does stay very close to urban centers throughout its journey, we'll be able to do fairly frequent resupplies, so we don't have to carry more than, you know, 3 or 4 days worth of food or gear at a time.
I'm curious to know how you feel paddling through Shasta Reservoir. One of my big concerns on these reservoirs, these giant reservoirs that are used for water supply in California, especially the ones I'm familiar with, Shasta and Oroville, is the areas surrounding the water. As the water goes down, it leaves all this naked soil that has practically no life, is highly vulnerable to erosion. And with the plan to raise Shasta Dam, I'm afraid about all the more stretch of river that's going to be inundated with these wildly fluctuating water levels. And as you're paddling down, before you hit the reservoir, when the reservoir is low, I wonder what it's like to be seeing the banks change from a healthy riparian forest to a highly erodible sacrifice zone, is the way I look at it. Is that how you see it? And how do you feel when you're paddling down once you start entering the realm of the reservoir, especially when the reservoir is low and leaving the naked banks?
I anticipate feeling definitely a shift in our energy. I mean, obviously that it's kind of like twofold, you know, we'll lose all the current as we enter the reservoir. But like you said, we're going to be losing the really lush, beautiful riparian zone of the upper Sac. And just, you know, driving across Shasta Lake, it always gives me kind of a strange feeling. It does feel really desolate. And so I imagine feeling that when we're paddling across Shasta Lake, just feeling almost like a loss of the flow, like literally the loss of the flow. But we're going to be paddling a lot harder. We're going to probably have some wind, and it's just going to, I don't know, be, yeah, it'll have an interesting vibe, I think.
Yeah, Shasta Dam has so much that it holds, not just water, but just historically as well. And I think we'll be thinking about everything that that reservoir represents for so many people in this state as we paddle across it.
Yes. I've been in communication over the years with Chief Sisk from the Winnemem Wintu tribe, and they've been putting up an effort to prevent the raising of the dam and how it's going to inundate some of the remaining sacred spots on the McLeod River. But of course, it's not just the McLeod River that'll be inundated with the reservoir floods. It'll be the Sacramento River and the arms of the Pitt River. So it'll have really extensive environmental effects. And I know one of the goals of your journey is to raise awareness of some of the environmental issues. And I really applaud you for doing that. It's so important for us in California to recognize the environmental implications of the water infrastructure that you will be paddling through on your journey to the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, what we're really hoping through our film and through interviews with all the different stakeholders is to get a really clear picture of all the folks that utilize the river and see it as an important piece of their either livelihood or tradition. And what we really want to do is role model open-mindedness. We want to be good listeners and hopefully not make anyone feel like their use of the river is negative or bad, and just bring more awareness to like all the different people that really use this river and the water and how challenging it can be to represent all of those stakeholders and interests. And it's complex. Everybody needs water. Just how does it get managed? That's kind of the crux.
I'm talking today with Ariana Kosel. Is that how you pronounce your name, Ariana?
Yeah, Ariana Kosel, or you can call me Ari.
Ari Kosel and Alyssa Winkleman, and along with their colleague Jamie Trapp, they're going to be kayaking down the entire length of the Sacramento River through the Delta and out through the bay and into the Pacific Ocean to the realm of the Orca. One of their goals is to raise awareness of environmental and social issues. I notice on the website that they're also concerned about forest health and fire risk. It's great to hear that your awareness goes all the way up to the actual source of the water, which is the forested and meadowlands, the watershed that feeds the water. Can you give me an idea of what your goal is and to raise awareness of forest health and fire risk issues?
Yeah, I think the last decade really in California has seen a massive increase in wildland fires that have encroached on residential areas, or rather even residential areas are encroaching on what used to be just forest habitat. And so we're seeing much more interface and direct impact of these fires on the populations in California and on the ecosystems. And so just trying to understand a little bit more about how the management of our watersheds has wider spread implications for the overall ecosystem health, and how, you know, with drought and water management leading to changes in forest management as well, it can result in a lot of like downstream effects, especially when there's, you know, runoff from these big wildfires flowing into waterways such as the Sac. So yeah, I think we're also curious and open and trying to understand how complex it all really is.
It's such an important issue, and I applaud you for doing it. We really need to recognize the importance of the watershed for the water in California, and water is the driving economic factor, and investing in watershed management is critical. And with the return
Absolutely. Of
using fire as a management tool and shifting from firefighting to fire management is one of the things that the Native community and some of my colleagues here in Chico that are getting good fire back on the landscape is one of the goals. And once you get into the valley, that's when you start noticing the issues of fish passage. And we're talking about anadromous fish, migratory fish, that start their life up in the upper watersheds. They spawn in the upper watersheds, and then they work their way downstream through various rearing habitat and into the delta, where they get big enough to go out into the ocean and survive and be part of the whole ecosystem in the ocean, and from the ocean all the way up into the upper watersheds. And there have been challenges with fish habitat and passage. So what do you see of what some of the challenges of fish habitat in the main stem of the Sacramento River, once you get into the river, and what are you going to try to highlight that as your journey?
Well, obviously the fish habitat has been, I mean, they've lost, you know, at least 40 miles of habitat, of really good, clean, cold water habitat. You know, the McLeod and the upper reaches of the Sac and the Pit are just such prime rearing habitat. And so it's just so sad that we've lost that, because that's such an important part of our ecosystem health. And so it's really obvious when you get down below Keswick Dam, you know, that's as high as they can go. And that habitat is just so not beneficial for their growth and their success, because it's just, you know, wide open, very shallow, and the water is really warm by that point. You know, they do an okay job of maintaining fish flows out of those dams, and the water is colder, but it doesn't compare to what it would be like if they were up in the mountains where they historically were able to spawn. And so it'll be really important for us to be able to highlight that. And I think we'll be, the spring Chinook run will be happening. And so hopefully we'll be able to get some footage of the run happening. But yeah, there, the Chinook run is endangered, and that's in big part due to not having as good spawning habitat.
Yeah, and I think when we get to the Delta, we're hoping to connect with, you know, some fish biologists and conservation groups who have been fairly active with the management of the Delta and trying to navigate this complex issue of maintaining habitat for these threatened and endangered fish species while also still meeting water demands of municipalities. And so I think in the Delta, we'll be able to see a lot more of it in action as well. And really curious just to hear the different perspectives at play.
And there are so many different projects going on with the salmon reintroduction. And obviously it's really tough because if there's salmon reintroduction above Shasta Lake, you know, they could potentially be raised up there, but then it's just a really unnatural process of having to be transported back down below Shasta Dam. So yeah, we're hoping that we can get an idea of what those salmon reintroduction projects look like. And then Jacob Katz with Caltrout has a really cool project going on called the Nigiri Project. And he's working with rice farmers to raise salmon in the Central Valley. And what they're finding is that that mimics what it used to be like before the river was really channelized and all the, you know, levees were built and flood control. Historically, the SAC would flood a huge range of the Central Valley, and that process helped raise really healthy, strong salmon. And what the Nigiri Project is finding is that the raising of salmon in the rice fields mimics nature. So it's a really cool project, and hopefully we can connect with Jacob as well.
What you're bringing up as far as rearing habitat in the rice fields, one of the reasons why Aqua Alliance supports the continuation of water being used for rice, because it does sort of mimic some of the pre-Euro-American development of the Central Valley by providing this habitat, as long as it doesn't have other negative environmental impacts. So it's a balance that needs to be struck between the human needs and the needs of fish, and hopefully mm-hmm. everyone can win. So it's great that you are approaching this with such open minds toward all the different efforts to harmonize human needs with environmental needs. I really appreciate that. Once you get into the Delta, when I look at maps of the Delta, it is such a complex network of channels. How are you going to navigate through the Delta and know you're going the right direction? I know that in the past, some fish have had trouble even navigating it when they crank up the pumps in the Southern Delta and it reverses the flow, makes it look like you may be going out toward the ocean, you may be paddling toward the pumps.
Yeah, such a good question. And it is really a complex area on so many levels, including nav. So I think we'll be relying on a lot of data from folks who have paddled the Delta, and then most likely we'll be using our map systems more heavily during that section just to make sure that we are actually taking the passage and route that we want to get where we need to get going.
I am so looking forward to seeing some of the images that you're going to be sending out from this long journey, both some of the areas that need rehabilitation, but also the areas that are still retaining good levels of wildlife. I hope you get some really good images of the up migrating salmon. That will be so exciting to see.
Yeah, that's our hope too.
Back in the early part of this century, in the late part of the last century, one of the big issues on the Sacramento River was riprapping the edges of the river to prevent erosion, and how that degraded the wildlife habitat value of it. And I'm curious, if you've paddled the river in the past, say, 10 years, has that situation improved? Are there sections of the river that have become more more valuable habitat that prior to that were rocky boulder edges from erosion control?
That's a really great question. And of the three of us, like, none of us have actually paddled below Shasta Dam very much. I don't think we'll be able to gauge on a personal level what sort of changes there have been environmentally. But we are aware of different projects that have been going on, like through the Nature Conservancy, of really trying to do a lot of riparian rehabilitation, especially along the riverbank. So we're just going to be curious and try and have attentive eyes and notice and record what we can, but we don't necessarily have a before and after perspective since this will be new section of the river for us.
Are you planning on taking any side trips, any of the sloughs or the tributaries that do provide such valuable salmon rearing habitat and also wildlife refuges for the otters and the beaver and the many birds that live in the Sacramento Valley?
On this particular trip, we'll be just on the main stem of the Sacramento, but we have been kind of talking about how it would be cool in the future to do some of the other tributaries. We, Ari and I, have both paddled on the McLeod, on a couple sections of the McLeod, and would love to explore that river and that tributary a lot more. So maybe in the future, this feels like this project is just continuing to grow. So we'll probably be doing more.
I imagine that you're planning on camping along the way. So you'll be camping on some of the islands and some of the edges of the river.
Yeah, we'll be camping. It sounds like there's definitely some cool places to camp, like above Chico. It sounds like it gets a little more challenging once we get down below Chico and into Sacramento and the Delta. But we've got some pretty good beta from folks who've done it. So I think we'll be able to find places to camp. But yep, we'll be camping the whole time.
And do you have a good support team to help resupply you on your way down and to stay in contact with?
Yeah, we feel super fortunate just within our community. There's so many people who have offered to do resupplies for us, and we're still figuring out the logistics of all that and how much we'll actually need people to meet us along the way. But the outpouring of folks who have offered has, like, really warmed our hearts, and we just feel super lucky to have so many people willing to show up for us. And yeah, we're just really grateful.
And once you enter the San Francisco Bay, I imagine that is because it's so wide open and open to air currents, to the wind, that's going to present a challenge. I know I've done a little bit of kayaking off the coast of the Pacific coast of Baja, and we had to choose days to do it in order to not get caught in the wrong spot at the wrong time and have to paddle back through heavy winds. How do you think you're going to feel paddling through the bay? Have you ever paddled through the bay and out into the Pacific?
Yeah, I don't think any of us have really paddled on the bay, so it'll be such a different experience for us. And for me personally, I think it maybe feels the most nerve-wracking since it is the least familiar. But we are connecting with some folks who've done a lot of sea kayaking on the bay and used to be sea kayak guides down there, so we're hoping to just really soak up all of their knowledge and maybe even meet them on the bay and have them paddle with us for sections, just since it is a little bit out of our, like, normal element.
I'm so impressed to know the combination of your confidence that you'll be able to do this, especially in the upper reaches, and your humility, knowing that you will need to have support and guidance from people that are experienced in other waters than you have. I congratulate you on both your courage and your humility.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, we're not trying to, like, prove that we know everything. I think that's a big part of this trip, is trying to show that we are very aware of the knowledge that we have and also our knowledge gaps, and we're just trying to be open.
I'm talking with Ari Kossel and Alyssa Winkleman, who, along with their colleague Jamie Trapp, are going to be going on a long journey from one of the main stems of the upper Sacramento River through the reservoirs in the upper portion of the Sacramento River, down through the main stem of the river into the Delta, through the bay and out into the Pacific Ocean. Are you actually going to paddle through the Golden Gate?
Yeah, the plan is to paddle. That's the end point. So I'm not sure if we'll go under it, how far out we'll go, but that's the beacon end point for us.
The vision that these women have is bound to inspire people to really value the Sacramento River watershed and the importance of it for both the economy and the environment of California. I encourage people to check out their website. They can certainly use some funding to help accomplish the entire project. I know from working with my colleague Guillermo that once you collect a lot of the media that they'll be doing with sound recordings and video recordings, that there's going to be a long process of editing, and this project is going to really yield some precious, precious final product. And if you'd like to contribute to it, you should look at their website. It's sacsourcetosea.com. That's SAC, S-A-C, for the Sacramento River, sacsourcetosea.com. It has been a real pleasure and an inspiration to talk to you two, and I look forward to following you on your journey.
Thank you so much for having us. Folks can also follow along with like fairly frequent updates of our journey on our Instagram. It's also sacsourcetosea.com, or not .com, just sacsourcetosea. And we'll be posting pretty frequent updates once we get on the water. And for anyone interested in the pre-trip planning, we have some silly videos and just kind of showing people what we're up to. So that's a great place to follow along as well.
Yeah, and we're so appreciative to have this chance to share a little bit more about our story, and definitely appreciate the shout out helping us fund this trip. We are feeling good fundraising and are hoping to keep that momentum going, because anything that we raise beyond the cost of our trip and the film production, we will be donating to the Cairn Project. That's Cairn as in on a trail, C-A-I-R-N. And it's an amazing nonprofit that supports getting young women outside, which is another one of our passions. As a group of three women out on a river adventure together, we're hoping to inspire more women to get outside and especially use our privilege and platform to support young women and access into the outdoors. So please help us out, because we're hoping to raise more than we need for our trip so that we can give back and get more women outside.
Excellent. I feel confident of your success. I look forward to meeting you sometime in the future. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, we'll be excited to meet you guys when we come through Chico.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Imagining Community is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsof.art. Also made possible by Dahlmeyer Insurance Agency, independent agent and retail broker since 1948. Dahlmeyer Insurance provides a range of coverage options, from home and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. You can reach Dahlmeyer Insurance in Chico at 342-6421 and in Oroville at 533-3424, or visit them at chicoinsurance.com. All right, Guillermo Mash back here in the KZFR studios for Imagining Community. And I just want to thank and say I'm just as thrilled as my friend Jim Brobeck for Sacramento Source to See, and look forward to the privilege of covering these three women on their journey from the source of the Sacramento all the way to the sea, and especially the lives and organizations their spirit flows into. Here's a special treat. As Jim Brobeck performs at the Weir, just downstream from the diversion dam at 5 Mile Recreation Area of Bidwell Park. Followed by Eric Chisler with Rock Creek Regenerative Farms, as our water series takes its first look into agriculture water consumption that comprises 80% of California's water usage, here on People Power Radio.
Well, Guillermo and I are sitting right below the weir that defines the upper reach of the Sycamore Channel. The Sycamore Channel is a gouge in the earth with a levee on both sides that was built in the mid-1960s by the United States Army Corps of Engineers. It's part of a flood control project here in Chico, California. Guillermo and I started our hike this morning up where Big Chico Creek flows out of the foothills into an area where it kind of spreads out and settles before it hits a boxed gate. And this boxed gate holds back the water from flowing through the ditch that flows through Chico, California. And it prevents the large amounts of the flow from coming through. This channel can carry as much as 16 or 18,000 cubic feet a second. And they only want, at the most, 1,500 of that flowing through Chico. And even at that rate, it does flood some of the low-lying areas around the Sycamore Pool and beyond. So we started up there where the gates cut off Chico Creek and makes it turn a hard turn kind of up toward the north toward what's called Lindo Channel. And then it flows down through the Lindo Channel through another set of boxed gates that are in concrete bridge that you can walk over the flood channel. It looked down into the levee area, and they allow 6,000 acre feet. In other words, about four times more water to go through the Lindo Channel than they do through Big Chico Creek as it flows through downtown Chico. So when you start out with 16,000 and you take 1,500 off the top and run that through town, then another 6,000 goes through the Lindo Channel. But that still leaves a considerable amount of water, about 10,000 acre feet of water left to flow. And where this big spray-painted middle cut in the levee, it's called a weir. It's a concrete structure. It's very beautiful. It's located very near where the fork is of Lindo Channel. And the Sycamore Creek, when we have a really good series of rainstorm and we get a good 15,000 cubic feet of water flowing through the channel a second, it flows down and fills up the Sycamore Channel and flows over this weir into these concrete blocks that break up the energy because it's a pretty steep drop between here and the river. So there you have it in a very short demonstration of Big Chico Creek and the city of Chico's flood control channel.
Catch a ripe river, hitchhike with your boat, paddle to the current, move with the flow, won't feel rhythm, river rhythm. I wanna feel that flow, feel the river flow, and though it seems bold, I wanna be that flow, be the river flow. Flow, I won't feel rhythm, ocean rhythm. I wanna feel that flow, feel the ocean flow. And though it seems bold, bold, I wanna be that flow, be the ocean flow.
For Imagining Community, and I'm really pleased. I'm always pleased to be out at Grub CSA Farm. Huh, Eric Chisler?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite places in the world.
And what we're going to be talking about today, I'm really excited for Eric and the community at large, but he's starting Rock Creek Regenerative Farm. And before I turn it over to Eric to do a short intro, I just wanted to get some feedback on what this means. Eric, on your Facebook page, you have a short, concise description, which I love. A small CSA farm with ecologically informed regenerative practices. Let's elaborate on that.
It's hard not to address that out without addressing 10,000 years of agriculture and kind of what that agriculture has done to the world and done to the land. I think one of the most illustrative pieces is when you do soil samples across most of agricultural America, you look at the amount of soil organic matter, the organic matter that's found in the soil, and it's 1% or less. A healthy forest ecosystem can be between 11 and 14%, and some really healthy prairie ecosystems can be up to 20-25%. So there's a lot of life in the soil. And one of the crises we're dealing with now is that life has left the soil, and when life leaves the soil, it leaves everything that grows in the soil. So when I decided that I wanted to try to venture out in my own farming adventure, I wanted to make sure that my primary goal was building the basis for life wherever I landed, and stewarding the land by making sure that it mimicked the wisdom of ecology. So when I say regenerative, that 1% soil organic matter and all the losses that go with it requires regeneration, and I hope that our practices encourage that and leave lots of room for indigenous wildlife and flora in with all of the food that we get to make.
So what's your background, Eric, as far as, you know, being ready to take on a project of this scale?
Boy, you know, by all rights, I shouldn't be able to do this in the sense that I've only farmed for maybe 4 years, but I've been watching the natural world for a long time and wanting to learn how to feed it better. And I've had great tutelage under Lee and Franny here at Grub Farm and Rob Montgomery out at Montgomery Farms in Durham. So it's primed me, I think, enough to give it a try.
You know, maybe explain what you're the most excited about, or maybe a short list.
I mean, I guess I have to start with my job at Grub was the first time that I ever felt like I had work that was worth doing, that I didn't want to resist or rebel against or generally find displeasing. So being able to provide food for my community is a good starting point, but being able to increase the water retention on the land and do something about the water troubles we're having, being able to create dense microbial life in a place where there was none, being able to sequester carbon out of the sky after I drive my car and feel like there's some justice in my daily life and some justice for the community in getting fed highly nutritious food that was also feeding the place that the food came from.
So let's talk a little bit about this quote that's on your Facebook page as well, mm-hmm. from an elder. I know you spent quite a bit of time with Stephen Jenkinson, but mm-hmm. he puts it pretty concise. He's got a lot of concise quotes. I like concise quotes. But he was pretty concise. You must learn to feed that which feeds you. How does that relate to you personally in this regenerative farm you're starting?
Well, you know, I've been an activist for a while and trying to find the best way forward, and there are lots of restorative actions that are necessary in the world, but there's principles to life that make it to where you don't have to be in restoration and recovery and savior mode all the time. And the central principle to life is anything that feeds you, if you don't feed it, it will stop feeding you. And that basis for all beautiful things to happen in this wild biological world needs to have champions, needs to have people who are willing to look at a consumptive society and say, your consumption is eroding the fabric of all relationships between all beings. And it's as simple as buying a carrot from the right place. to start to do the good work of restoring that relationship with the world.
I just love buying the grub carrots.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of them are misformed. They're different colors. You wouldn't find them in a supermarket, but they're as good a carrot as I've had.
Yeah. I love the ones that look like they're running.
Like they're running. That's like they have legs.
Yes.
And they're running. You had three main, I'm calling them pillars, but you had three main pillars. But let's talk about them. I'll name them all three of them, and then we can go in order. But this Rock Creek Regenerative Farm is based upon no-till practices, retaining water, and fair share. Let's talk about those three, starting with the no-till practice.
The history of agriculture and the history of the destruction of ecologies around the world starts with tilling, with digging up the earth in order to make prime farmland. And there are lots of consequences that emanate out from that practice. And the number one of those consequences is reduced biodiversity in the soil, because when you till the soil, you break up all of the little spaces in between the dirt clods where all of the microorganisms and worms and everything else live. So having no-till practices, one, creates a safe habitat for all of those little helpers. And two, all of that organic matter that goes into the soil is coming from the sky. When you have a plant emerge from the ground, all of the data that came with it was in that tiny little seed, but all the carbon that makes the plant is pulled out of the sky through the photosynthetic cycle. So when you don't till, that carbon stays in the ground, and we want to make sure that we're doing what we can to keep as much carbon in the ground as possible.
So keeping that carbon in the ground and the no-till practices is germane to being able to retain water. Why don't you talk a little bit about the basis of the farm and its ability to increase the soil's ability to retain water?
So I came across this just astounding statistic when I was watching a video by the farmer who runs Singing Frog Farm in Sonoma County. And he said that for every 1% of soil organic matter in 1 acre, you retain 20,000 gallons of water.
Wow.
Gold Roots Farm, another farm that that I've been, you know, in conversation with, who are friends with, that are up-and-coming young farmers, go and get their lettuce at the Saturday Farmers Market. They have increased their soil organic matter by 6% in 1 year. And if you calculate that into 1 acre, that's 100,000 gallons of water that they're retaining that were not getting retained the year before. And all of that water, when it's retained in these top layers, generally infiltrate down to the aquifer and recharge the aquifer. So it keeps the cycles going, and it keeps the ground wet, which encourages the other hydrologic cycles of rain and strong trees that don't die in droughts, because the water is retained there in the topsoil. So our goal is, you know, on the little 2 acres that we're running, if we can get 10% organic matter over a couple of years, it's over 200,000 gallons of water that are going to be retained on the land. And that's continuous, not just a one-time recharge.
So let's talk about, really, the magic of CSA, community-supported agriculture. Let's talk about your ideas for fair share and how that works into the worker and, you know, having fair wages and fair price for your goods.
So fair share is an idea from permaculture, one of the principles of permaculture, and it applies not just to the humans on the farm, but also everything else. Not being a farm whose sole goal is to kill every competitor means that we're offering a fair share to the ants and the slugs and the bugs. And while we don't invite them, and we certainly welcome their predators to show up and manage the populations, you know, we're not banishing them. And when it comes to humans, we deserve to be able to make a good life for ourselves off of the work that we're doing. And anybody who works with us also deserves that. And whatever it takes to make sure that we're capable of doing that, that's how we'll adjust our prices. We've also been toying with other pieces of how we can be creative, like including a $5 optional fee on the CSA to pay for the carbon sequestration we're doing that makes the farming a little bit more difficult and tedious.
Okay.
So, that's kind of the principle.
Let's talk a little bit about Rock Creek, you know, why you came up with that name. I'm doing a little bit of research. I guess there's a reclamation district there. I mean, how familiar are you with Rock Creek and, you know, how did you come up with this name?
We were looking at names and we had a few, and our basic tenet is the name has to speak something about the place that we're right. at. We're in the Rock Creek drainage of the Big Chico Creek watershed, and it seemed like a proper homage to the water that keeps us going.
Anything you'd like to elaborate on more, or something we haven't talked about we could talk about now before we close? Eric Chisler?
You know, I'm a word nerd. Language is my first love. And I was reading about the word farmer, and it literally means one who upholds life and provides life. And I hope that what we're doing out there is true to the title that we've taken on.
All righty, Eric Chisler, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
Imagining Community is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by StormTech.net, a locally owned one-stop shop for storm and weather-related safety items for home and property. StormTech.net offers products for flood control and prevention, water absorption, landslide prevention, and building and worksite protection. Visit StormTech.net and be prepared for whatever Mother Nature has in store. Also made possible by Tres Hombres, celebrating over 30 years in downtown Chico. Tres Hombres has reopened with Latin dishes made fresh from scratch, award-winning margarita, and patio seating, serving lunch and dinner Wednesday through Sunday from noon to 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. To-go orders and curbside pickup also available. Visit their Facebook page for details and updates, and a big thank you for your continued support. Yeah, Animal Mash, thanking you for listening to tonight's Imagining Community segment in our continuing year-long series on water. You can follow Imagining Community on Facebook and Instagram and listen to our podcast on all major streaming platforms. A quick shout out for Butte County Local Food Network's urgent need for Spring Garden Blitz volunteers installing throughout Butte County the 26th through the 31st of this month. Imagining Community covered the initial blitz last spring, and it was a rewarding and fun experience. Learn more at bclocalfood.org. Tomorrow is the start of KZFR's Spring Pledge Drive. Heck, why wait till Friday? Head on over to kzfr.org now and hit the donate button in support of high-quality, community-centric programming like Imagining Community, first Thursdays at 6 p.m., Ecotopia, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., the Peace and Social Justice Program, Fridays at 11:30 a.m., and so much more. Thank you. We're taking you to the top of the hour with Water So Deep from Jesse Naomi's debut 2021 album, Stand in Your Power. Until the next time, always remember, if you have a roof, be grateful.
Water so deep, water so wide, water braiding the earth and the sky. Mountains so strong, mountains so tall, lifted by spirit and holding us all. Let the mountains guide us, and the waters carry us songs. Back to creation, where we belong, when we free our voices, we free our hearts. Breaking chains inside, tearing us apart. Water so deep, water so wide, water braiding the earth and the sky. Mountains so strong, mountains so tall, lifted by spirit and holding us all. Salmon are returning, ancient paths in the stars. The light of life inside us is lit by the same spark. When we lose our way, think there's nowhere left to turn. Prayers are all around. We can always return. Water so deep, water so wide, water braiding the earth and the sky. Mountains so strong, mountains so tall, lifted by spirit and holding us all.